Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Hannah Pagel. Our guest this week is Maine Democrat Shelley Pingree, who joins us to discuss FDA's proposed new structure and the upcoming farm bill. But first, here's this week's headlines. Biden administration officials say they are actively engaged with Mexico to discuss a resolution on their ban of genetically modified corn imports. USDA Trade Undersecretary Alexis Taylor addressed the issue and other trade matters in a Senate Ag Committee hearing Wednesday. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley asked Taylor about a timeline on when a resolution would take place. She said there is no timeline quite yet, but the Biden administration has made it clear it would be willing to challenge the ban under the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement if no agreement can be reached. Western states missed a deadline this week to agree on a management plan for the Colorado River. The Federal Bureau of Reclamation had given the states until Tuesday to come up with a plan, but disagreement between California and the other six states failed to be resolved. Finally, FDA Commissioner Robert Califf has proposed creating a new human foods program at the agency. A reorganization rolled out this week would also create a new deputy commissioner for foods. Califf said his vision for the program follows the recommendations outlined in a watchdog report that criticized the agency's action in light of last year's infant formula crisis. Maine Democrat Shelley Pingree sits on the Appropriations Subcommittee charged with funding the agency. She says the FDA is in need of proper structure.
The fact that we had this huge crisis related to infant formula, I think, rocked everyone on their heels and just exposed big concerns about the FDA, about their regulation of food safety. That is an issue that Congress has been working on for a very long time, but I think this just exposed the need for an overhaul. I sit on the Agriculture Appropriations Subcommittee, and I think we will do some thorough questioning and a little more digging into exactly what the issues are and whether this goes far enough. So I can't say yet whether I feel like we've seen a solution to the problem, but I think the fact that that there is this attempt to reorganize, to really rethink how we go about regulating human food is critically important, and Congress will put a big focus on it this year.
So some industry groups and consumer advocates say that Califf's proposal doesn't go far enough in addressing, or unifying the agency's leadership. Do you think, I know you're still waiting to hear on some information on that, but do you think that this proposal so far will go far enough, or do you think there will be more changes that will need to be made?
You know, again, I'm not sure I'm ready to comment on exactly all the details, but I think it's very likely that we'll want to push this a little bit further. I think we take our responsibility very seriously here in Congress of making sure we do give the FDA proper oversight. And I think some of the issues of the recent past have shown us that, you know, we haven't been doing our job and they haven't been doing their job.
So you mentioned you sit on the Appropriations Committee. As an appropriator that oversees FDA's, the money that's allocated to them, do you think that they have enough money to make these changes, or do you think that there will be more funds that are needed down the road?
I usually take the point of view that this is an under-resourced agency, that we ask too much of them, that they're understaffed and under-resourced. I may hear differently from my colleagues, but I think this will be the year that we really look at in enhancing their funding.
Okay. And you don't have like a dollar amount on what that could possibly look like, right?
No. And, you know, let's face it, we're probably going to have a contentious budget and appropriating year because, you know, the Republicans will be looking to make cuts, and we'll just have to argue that this is not one of the appropriate places to make cuts. And it's always hard to spend more money in a year when there's a lot of cuts on the table. But I think given the recent issues, that this will be a good time to make that argument.
Okay. And given the debate on the debt ceiling, do you know how else will that impact farm bill decisions? You mentioned that FDA is not an area you'd want to make cuts, but what does that look like in terms of the farm bill?
Well, as you know, about 75% of the farm bill is related to nutrition. And that's always a, you know, shocking number for people, because we have so many titles in the farm bill and so much that it covers, from credit to trade to, you know, all of rural life. So there's a lot in there. But I've been through a couple of farm bills, and usually the arguments that we have are related to the nutrition title. Will there be, cuts in the SNAP benefit programs? Will there be more restrictions? So my guess is that that's, usually politically where we debate, and it's also the place that the greatest cuts could be made. I will make the argument very strongly that, we're still seeing a lot of people who are struggling with, the after effects of the pandemic, just rising inflation and food costs, and this is no time to be cutting back in that area, but I anticipate it will be where we have that debate, and particularly if, if we're in an atmosphere of making cuts, and when it comes to the farm bill, that's where the money is.
We'll be right back with more from Congresswoman Pingree right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. Our interview continues with Representative Pingree discussing the improvements she'd like to see made in the nutrition title of the Farm Bill.
I'm going to strongly advocate for continuing to expand the programs that allow people to access more healthy fruits and vegetables. Frankly, that costs more money, not less. But it also is great for our farmers. We should be selling more fruits and vegetables, but we should really be making sure that those people who are struggling the most to put food on the table aren't having to do so kind of with empty calories. We've learned so much about how your diet impacts your health, and with childhood obesity on the rise, with rising rates of diabetes and heart disease and high blood pressure, almost all of those can be corrected or supported by having a better diet. So we just really need to make sure that we're doing more to make sure that we get healthy fruits and vegetables and healthy foods into people's diet. And there's a chance that that's going to cost us more, but I think it's a really important investment up front.
What proposals are you expecting to make or wanting to make the Farm Bill more climate friendly?
I mean, I was thrilled with the money that was in the Inflation Reduction Act. I think it did go a long way to helping to support our conservation programs. And look, I may refer to them as climate friendly. Somebody else might refer to them as, conservation programs. And somebody else might just say, like, how do we support our farmers in getting better yields, in being better able to deal with, adverse weather like rainfall and drought and some of the challenges that they're facing. Most of these are programs that farmers across the country of all sizes are already adopting, things like cover crops and no-till, increasing the organic matter in the soil. There's a lot in there that, frankly, we have long lines already of farmers waiting to access these funds, EQIP, CRP. These are programs that, they don't have to be invented. They just have to be supported. We have to have more technical assistance available to farmers. Sometimes you've got a farmer who says, hey, I want to try no-till, but there's nobody in my area doing it, or I have to invest in more equipment. How do I go about doing it? So I don't think we're talking about something revolutionary and scary. And sometimes if you just say the word climate, people think like, oh my gosh, you're going to make me stop eating hamburgers. And, I'm not talking about anything like that. We're talking about, far more support to our farmers, seeing them as real partners in sequestering carbon from the atmosphere, because nobody does that better than a farmer who puts a lot of organic matter in the soil. That, frankly, is exactly, what we need to have happen. So, yes, there was money in the Inflation Recovery Act, but the fact is these programs are oversubscribed, and we need to make sure in the Farm Bill we're continuing to have that emphasis and, I think, enhance their funding.
Congresswoman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be with you.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion, but first, Andrew Hunneke takes a look at crop insurance options in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
USDA is promoting new crop insurance choices this year as the Risk Management Agency seeks to expand offerings to a wider variety of crop and livestock farmers. This chart shows how vital crop insurance is to farmers and ranchers, especially when portions of the country suffer from severe drought, such as in 2012 and 2022. Last year, farmers bought crop insurance on 493 million acres nationwide, up from 283 million acres in 2012. Indemnity payments, which are made to farmers only when production or price disruptions result in crop yields or revenues below those guaranteed by the insurance, also increased by almost $16 billion. USDA's Risk Management Agency is also working to promote the Whole Farm Revenue Protection Policy. The department hopes to entice more specialty crop operations to buy whole farm policies by doubling the maximum insured revenue this year to $17 million. Phil Brasher takes a deeper look at crop insurance changes for 2023 in his story on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Don't miss the must-attend policy event of the year. Register now for the 2023 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. This year, we'll focus on next-gen food and farm policy as we examine the forward-looking ideas that will drive policy discussions for this year and the decades ahead. The summit takes place on March 20th at the National Press Club in Washington and through our virtual experience. Take advantage of early bird rates until February 15th. Register today under the Events tab at AgriPulse.com.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Excited to get into our panel discussion today. We are joined by Tom Chapman with the Organic Trade Association, Jacqueline Schneider with FGS Global, and James Glick with Tory Advisory Group. And Tom, my first question is to you. You know, USDA recently came out with their new final rule, the Strengthening Organic Enforcement Rule, to help, you know, strengthen the oversight and enforcement of the program. And your organization came out with a statement saying that this new final rule has a significant and far-reaching impact on the organic sector. Can you tell us a little bit more about why that is?
Yeah, this is the single largest revision to the organic standards since they were first published over 20 years ago. And it really brings under the organic certification umbrella a lot of operations that were previously excluded. What this does is previously uncertified operations like brokers, handlers, importers, exporters, anyone who stores an unpacked product, all those will now need to be certified. Previously, they did not require a certification because the certification focused on the entities that did value add activities. So now all those entities required to be certified. In addition to that, import is now a critical control point with specific data needing to be verified by customs. Then that data being aggregated so the USDA can audit that data and ensure that any products coming into the U.S. were grown by U.S. certified or grown by certified operations, and that those countries have efficient production to support those export pounds. So at the end of the day, this just takes the rare cases of fraud and makes it that much harder for a bad actor to infiltrate the system, maintaining that trust for producers and for consumers who are working in the organic marketplace.
Mm-hmm. And James, bringing you into the conversation here, you know, with this new Congress, there are many new faces. In addition to new congressmen and women, there are many members of Congress who have never worked on a farm bill. You know, as you're working with your clients, as you're getting ready to lobby on behalf of the farm bill, you know, what advice do you have for farmers and producers as, you know, they're getting ready to talk to their congressmen, their lawmakers, about how to persuade them to make changes in farm policy?
No, and I think that's a great question. Education is always a key in engaging with members of Congress and their staff. And I think that's something that's, you know, no different with a number of new members on both the Senate side and the House side. More new members, I think, than we've probably seen in a really long time in Congress, not just in the body as a whole, but particularly even on the ag committees. So I think making sure to engage, tell that story, and make it part of the value chain. You know, there might be members and who represent more urban districts that they eat, you know, three times a day at least, you know, just like folks from rural districts. And so I think connecting to folks as people and helping understand where the different priorities within a farm bill, someone is thinking about what matters most to them, is how that connects to that member, to their staff, and to the constituents they represent, I think is really, really important to tell that story both in Washington, as folks are here. We'll hopefully have a chance to hear from stakeholders and hearings on the House and Senate side, but also back in the district. There's a lot of recess time coming up, you know, this month and kind of in the months ahead to tell that story.
Mm-hmm. And Jacqueline, you know, there were a lot of funds that were allocated in the Inflation Reduction Act for climate and conservation programs, but there are some Democrats on the Hill that are calling for a more climate-friendly farm bill. I'm curious, you know, what other changes or improvements can we expect to be made in that area in terms of the farm bill?
So I think first and foremost, one of the most important things that Democrats are going to be looking to do is to protect the resources that were allocated in the Inflation Reduction Act. This is some of the largest new investment in climate and conservation policy that we've seen in a very long time. I think there's also some policy opportunities that the process of reconciliation didn't afford Democrats. So I think there will be discussions around some additional policy tweaks and how to maintain the resources that were allocated as a part of the Inflation Reduction Act in farm bill programs, in farm bill conservation programs for the long term, since there are some limitations on what can be done during the reconciliation process. So there's certainly some opportunities to improve upon what was done, but I do think that Democrats will be very focused on trying to maintain the significant resources in conservation and climate-based practices, and hopefully build upon what was done to continue to improve soil health and respond to the need that Democrats are hearing from farmers on the ground that are asking for resources to support the activities that they want to engage in for climate-friendly practices, soil health, to try to mitigate some of the impacts that we're seeing from drought and other related weather-related issues. So I do think that there's going to be an ongoing conversation with farmers on how to best utilize those programs to address the climate crisis and build upon what was done in the Inflation Reduction Act.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Welcome back. Our panel continues with a look at the debt ceiling debate and what that means for the upcoming farm bill.
I think that the debt ceiling conversation is one that's gotten a lot of attention. It's a very important conversation. I think Republicans clearly, the debt, it matters a lot. A similar debt conversation was the backdrop for two farm bills ago that resulted in a bill that the Four Corners, Democrats and Republicans, agreed to find savings in. And so I think folks are going to watch that debt ceiling conversation very closely. But I also think from where the House Republicans sit, they've said time and time again, bring us your ideas, bring us your priorities, and we'll figure out the process. And so I think that's something that the folks should really take to heart. Historically, farm bills pass in very different ways. We've had farm bills get vetoed. We've had farm bills that have failed in the House floor and then come back with really strong bipartisan support. And so I think that's leaving that pathway open, giving the chairman, his team, as much leeway as possible in getting a bill done that will cross that bipartisan finish line is the key. But clearly folks are going to watch the debt ceiling conversation to see if there's additional resource limitations that need to be considered.
Mm-hmm. And Jacqueline, we had your former boss, Senator Debbie Stabenow, on the show a few weeks ago, and she made it very clear that she would not accept any cuts to the nutrition title, but she was open to improvements to the nutrition title. From your experience working with her, what type of changes could we expect to be made in this area?
anything that goes directly at reducing benefits or eligibility is something that I think you'll see strong resistance from her and the Democratic caucus as a whole. But there certainly are always opportunities to improve the program. There's a lot of attention on healthfulness in the program. I think incentive-based programs that the chairwoman put into place and has been working on growing has a good deal of bipartisan support, support that you've also seen from the chairman and members of the Republican caucus on both sides of the Capitol, produce prescriptions, trying to improve some of the healthfulness of the stores that are in the program, connecting participants to nutrition education. There's certainly also some opportunities to try to modernize and move the program into the 21st century. We've seen great responses from things like online SNAP and trying to improve some of the technology that's utilized to make the consumer experience more friendly, and concerns around things like skimming and benefits being taken as a result of fraud and theft, something that was addressed in the omnibus. But I think there's probably some opportunities where there's some bipartisan action that can take place on issues like that. And I think the chairwoman will certainly be looking for opportunities to improve the program just in a way that preserves access and benefits for beneficiaries.
Mm-hmm. And Tom, looking at OTA's Farm Bill priorities, how is your organization hoping to improve the access to organic farmers when it comes to risk management tools and the programs that they can enter into?
Yeah, thank you for that question. You know, we want organic farmers to thrive. And in the wake of climate disasters, supply chain shocks, and international trade disputes, the need for risk management tools that appropriately address the unique needs of organic farmers has never been clearer. We've been encouraged recently by some actions of the USDA that have rolled out risk management tools meeting the unique needs through the Organic Transition Initiative, the TOGA program, the Organic Dairy Market Assistance Program. And we want to continue to make those strides of designing programs that meet the unique needs of organic producers. I'm just going to give you one example of risk management kind of discrepancy. You know, you need to have an actual production history that resets for your farms and crops. That resets when you transition to organic. You have a four-year transition period and you need a four-year history. It's going to be 16 years before you get accurate risk management coverage for your farm. That's just way too long for our organic producers. We need to find a better solution that serves them appropriately.
Thank you all for joining us today. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke takes a look at the states with the highest organic sales in this week's Map It Out.
Organic acreage and sales are both growing across the country. USDA's organic surveys provide acreage, production, and sales data for organic crop and livestock commodities. Data from the most recent survey shows that U.S. farms and ranches sold $11.2 billion in certified organic commodities in 2021, which is up 13% from 2019. It also shows that 54% of those sales was for crops, while 46% was for livestock. This map shows the amount of money that each state had in certified organic sales in 2021. California accounted for nearly $3.6 billion in sales, which is 32% of the country's total. Washington, Pennsylvania, Texas, and Oregon rounded out the top five. Milk and broiler chicken were the top two certified commodities sold. Milk was valued at $1.6 billion and chickens were valued at $1.5 billion. The top selling crop commodities were apples, corn for grain, and strawberries. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Don't miss the Must Attend Policy event of the year. Register now for the 2023 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. This year, we'll focus on next-gen food and farm policy as we examine the forward-looking ideas that will drive policy discussions for this year and the decades ahead. The summit takes place on March 20th at the National Press Club in Washington and through our virtual experience. Take advantage of early bird rates until February 15th. Register today under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together, we celebrate together, but we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. President Joe Biden will deliver his State of the Union address on Tuesday. USDA will release its farm income forecast and a new World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates report. AgriPulse.com will have the latest developments and more throughout the week. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Hannah Pagel. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.